Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps. Our guest this week is the founder of Supportive Divorce Solutions, and as a certified divorce financial analyst, does so much incredible work in informing people around the realities. And in particular, their work is around the financial side, so empowering people to make the best decisions they can in these highly stressful situations and do some of the kind of fun financial magic to alleviate some of the stresses of maybe you don't need to sell the house you're living in. Instead, we can sell some other things and we can balance the books and make a fair separation in other ways rather than, you know, nobody gets to live in the house or whatever might disrupt things. With that in mind, I'm so delighted to be getting to chat to you again, having previously talked to you on my other podcast. So please welcome to the show, Gillian Jones.
Hello, hello, everyone. Hi, Bobby. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, it's so lovely to catch up. And I found our previous conversation so insightful. So we were obviously going at divorce and kind of relationships more generally as a factor in mental health. And I learned so much from it because I think divorce, like I alluded to there, is very much something that we don't know about. And maybe sometimes we don't really want to know about because we know that it's complex and tough and difficult to understand and difficult to access even until we're at the point of needing one.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think anyone wants to learn the details of divorce. Like you said, read about divorce. Until they're getting divorced. Actually, even then, some choose to keep blinders on for as long as possible until they're literally being forced by papers being served to them that they need to do something because their spouse has called it quits. Mm-hmm. So, you know, another thing with that is it's not just the person not wanting to talk about it. It's society not wanting to talk about it, which is going to influence the person themselves. So the idea that you're divorcing, you failed as a person, you failed as a wife, a husband, a mother, a father, whatever it may be. Like, no, don't let anybody know, God forbid. And then speaking of God as well, you know, certain religions, you know, you're not supposed to get divorced. It doesn't matter what's going on, you're not supposed to get divorced. And every once in a while, I will actually have a potential client that comes to me that says that they need to go and talk to their pastor or their priest. And thank goodness, less than a handful of times, thank goodness they've come back and said, you know, it's unfortunate, they said, but, you know, I have their blessing that I can move forward. And I'm like, well, good, because this is crap, you know.
It's a strange thing. I cover a religious background myself, and yet I think there are certain things that it's very dangerous to meddle with. And I think relationships in general are one of those things where, as much as we kind of jokingly here have like rules of the game as a segment to the podcast, I think it can actually do so much harm to have like really fixed ideas about what is a healthy relationship for someone. And that can really trip us up because, like we talked about before, what is an unhealthy relationship can be difficult to get a grasp on all the different ways that that presents itself. So how could we ever define like, oh, there's only one good type of relationship either?
Right. Yep, absolutely. And there, you know, often can be a spectrum as there is with so many things. You know, I grew up in a fairly religious family. We were at church every Sunday. I was at religious school every Sunday. I had to go through all of my sacraments. So I was raised Catholic all the way up until 10th or 11th grade when I was confirmed and deemed to be an adult in the church, which is when I could make my own choices, kind of stopped being Catholic per se in college when I learned a lot about religions, but going pretty far off on my tangent now that I like to do, as you know. So there's that spectrum. Like with some people, it can be as intense as, even though I'm being abused, I married into the blah, blah, blah church, I'm still not allowed to get a divorce, right? There's the extremes. But yeah, there's spectrums with everything.
Yeah. And I think a lot of this stuff that we soak up, whether it's societal, whether it's to do with religion or other factors in our background, at times we can really carry that with us. And I wonder how much of that is to do with like a romantic outlook that maybe part of the reason why societally we have trouble talking about divorce is because it conflicts with the idealized version of relationships that we want to believe in. You know, like I get to host a show like this and hear all kinds of dating horror stories and talk about the nuts and bolts. And I have plenty of my own cynicisms. And yet I love like romantic music and rom-coms. And I love like daydreaming about people I fancy. And, you know, we want to buy into that, right?
Yeah. And I think we're dealing with two extreme emotions there too. When we're thinking about someone that we're with, especially if it's someone we just met, and we have all those awesome chemicals going on in our brains that you're on cloud nine all of the time, or it's just you're in general, really great relationship that's healthy. You know, you feel safe and secure. That's a great feeling to have. And then there's the other side, the divorce. I'm scared. I'm worried that I might not even have the basics I need to financially survive with me and my children. So of course we want to stay as an animal, as a human being, basic instinct. We want to stay in the spot of happy feelings, mm-hmm. good chemicals. Let's celebrate this. Let's stay here for as long as we can. We do not want to go all the way over to the other side. That's super scary. We want to avoid that as much as possible.
Yeah. And so often that is how people end up at a relationship breakup as well, is that all the things that you've avoided, and how long can you do that for? And before we get into talking any more about this, let's backtrack. Let's talk about beginnings of relationships, and you all have a story to share, or potential beginnings, I should say.
Okay, so I was thinking about sharing a first date, last date story. Would that be a good one to share, Bobby?
Fun, yeah.
Okay, so as so many people have over the years, I got on Match.com because that is how we find people these days. Now, I am in the best relationship of my life right now. I met him on Match, but I had to go through 8 frogs to get to Sean, the prince, right? So anywho, one of these 8, I was chatting with for a little while. No, it was at the very beginning. I think he was only the second guy, maybe even the first guy that I met on Match. So I didn't have all these protocols in place. Like I learned as I go along how to do better, not safety checks, but safety checks. And is this person who they really say they are? Mm-hmm. So anyways, this gentleman, he was younger than me, which is odd because I usually don't go for younger. And he was an ex lacrosse player, still ran all the time, was in really good shape. All those things are important to me because I have a very active lifestyle. Yes, I want someone who's attractive, but it's more than just that. It's also, I need you to be able to keep up with me. I need you to run with me. I need you to hike with me. I want you to lift weights with me. And you're only going to be able to do that if you're in shape, which translates to you're probably good looking too. So I win no matter what. Yeah. And they win too. But I also need someone who's going to have conversations with me where we can have educated debates and so many other things. But now I'm describing the type of person that I like. So this guy, super athletic, played in college, still goes to the gym, say what their height is, they have pictures, all those things are online. So I finally say, all right, let's go on a first date. I picked a place that we could go hiking. Now, very public place. You're going to see people all over the place. You're going to see mountain bikers. It's cleared. It was ski resort that I was extremely familiar with. He wasn't whatsoever. So it was still safe. So anyways,
I like that home advantage that you were like, not only have I chosen the place, but I've chosen somewhere that strategically I know all the escape routes. I can duck behind.
I really do that. Are you sure you want to go hiking? What if I was going to kill you or something? I'm like, oh no. I know where all the spots are to, put a body. That's where I put the last few from Match.com. I already knew where to hide all the bodies. I'd been skiing, snowboarding there since sixth grade. So yeah, I know all the places for sure. And I know the places where you're not going to see quite as many people. They have no idea. They're just following me around like a puppy dog.
I love that because by contrast, I only know one person that I know goes on first dates, which are hikes. And I've always thought but then you're trapped with the person time-wise as well. I wasn't even thinking as much of being trapped up a mountain with them as being trapped of the time frame of that pursuit. But then, I mean, you know all the escape routes. You also know all the routes full stop. So you can be like, oh, surprise, we're back down. It's only taken 20 minutes. Yeah, this was the plan all along. Did you not know it was? Had you not looked to the route? It was only a 20-minute.
I know those mountains like it's the back of my hand. So absolutely. So you get all of this. You know exactly what I'm doing. And no, he was not the first one that I used that ski slope with. That ski slope got used again for a first date. If it works, it works. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I meet up with this gentleman. Nice guy. Don't get me wrong. He's a nice guy. He is 4 inches shorter than what he said. I get we might fudge a little bit on sites, which you shouldn't. I get people do it a little bit. I'm not going to yell at you for lying about your height by an inch.
I don't know. I think I'm stricter on it than you are. I think it... Why would you start getting to know somebody with lying? Like, why would that be the thing that even before you've talked, you've put lies on your profile? Not a good start.
That's not a good start.
No. And, you know, yes, we need to...
I was no lies. I had no lies on my profile. My boyfriend now had no lies on his. So, see how that works with no lies? Because I fell in love with the person that presented themselves, and that's the true him, and he did the same thing. And that's why it works out so well, because we didn't make each other fall in love with someone who's really not there. That's not going to, you know, be there long term, because we were faking it. Mm-hmm. So this guy was certainly faking it. So I was like, all right, number one, like, you are way shorter than I thought. Like, you're my height practically. I've done it before. But if you were like, you know, in a social situation with me, I would not have started a conversation with you. I wouldn't have naturally been drawn to you. And then the bigger thing, if you're lying about this, like, this is a big lie, right? Like, what else are you lying about? So the whole thing is, I was immediately turned off. So I'm like, this is a huge lie. Not okay with this. I am completely turned off right now. And then on top of that, his pictures were old. So the common story of the pictures being old. Now, was it like some, like, he was 100 pounds bigger than he said? No, but he could like not even walk with me. I asked him a few times, like, is something wrong? Like, you were running up hills the other day. Did you strain yourself? And he's like, no, I'm fine. And I'm like, but you're not keeping up with me. And we were not hiking up a hard hill. And then it was like, he was limping. And then I was like, is he really limping or am I going crazy? And I'm like, no, he's limping. So I was like, are you sure you didn't hurt yourself? It's almost like you're limping. And he's like, no, I'm not. And I was like, okay, fine then. So he's lying about a limp. I can clearly see, even though he was supposedly running hills the other day, I made it very, very, very clear to not try to kiss me or hug me or any of those things. If I wanted to have any physical contact on the first date, I would make it abundantly clear and make the first mover literally say it.
Wait, so with that, was it you'd said that you would make it clear if you wanted something to happen?
Yeah, I told him multiple times, so it was clear as day, like before the date, maybe even right before the date, like because we were texting basically, that I did, like, don't even try to hold my hand, let alone kiss me. Oh God, no, like, do not do any of that. Just no. So we get up to the top of one of the hills and I'm like, I got to get the hell out of here. I got to do that thing you and I were just talking about where I backtrack out, right? And he picks me up, not very well, but he picks me up probably an inch off the ground and kisses me. I was like, what the fuck, dude? Like, this is beyond crossing a boundary that I've made very, very clear. Now, I didn't think he was going to like do anything bad. But regardless, it doesn't matter. Like,
that's also a lot, right? Like, if you're going to make a move that big, you're also going to get a massive rejection because you would have to pretty much push yourself down off him in order to get out of that rather than like swerve a kiss, right? And it's disappointing to hear because as you were describing, like, you setting boundaries before the date, I was kind of wondering, like, oh, interesting that he went along with this, because I know a lot of people would maybe be put off of like, okay, this person's setting really hard boundaries that they keep reiterating. You know, maybe that's kind of throwing it off or taking away the romance a bit for me of the what could happen. And unfortunately, I think he's answered that right there, that he wasn't planning to respect your boundaries. And that's why they didn't feel restrictive to him.
And he wasn't even the, like, I'm going to say typical, because I dealt with these guys a ton of times before. It wasn't even like the typical, like, I'll do whatever I want. I'm an aggressive man. He wasn't like that. It was like he just like had some fictitious thing in his mind about what he and I were, because there were some things. So that basically ended it. Like, you know, we went back, whatever, you know, he didn't try to force anything else. He was like, shit, I fucked this up. But like, he kept texting me and like, I'm sorry and this and that and like begging, and like, I blocked him. And then he found me on Match somehow again. It was really just pathetic is what it ended up being. I was in no way threatened by him, but I was just like, you'll find somebody. It's not me. But just like, that's not how you find somebody.
Yeah. And I do kind of feel like it's worth saying here that, you know, so often those are the ones that you have to watch out for, right? Like, that's the reality of it, that, you know, there are so many concerns, understandably, that women have in dating around safety. And at times you can maybe find yourself projecting that onto like, okay, like a big, scary, strong, loud man, you know, can seem like the most aggressive. And actually, it's the ones that kind of are coming from a disempowered place. And that's not necessarily physical. That could mean a million things. But if they're creepy and disempowered and insecure, you know, they've maybe got less to lose and certainly a lot more they want to grab and gain that they may feel entitled to, whether it's to do with toxic masculinity or living in the patriarchy. And, you know, so often I've had to even check the other side of that in myself, where I've been, you know, the person that supported friends of mine when they've needed to go to the police about things that have happened. And I've found that part of me, you know, that narrow-minded masculinity rising up in myself, where I'm like, oh, but this guy's pathetic. Like, I could take him, as if that's what this is about. Like, it's, right, you know, it's... Because that's the opposite. And yet we can kind of all fall trap to like, oh, we think we'll see the dangerous guy coming. And sadly, it's not as simple as that. And I think...
A lot of times the most dangerous are, you know, disguised, meaning physically it's not what you think.
Yeah, physically, or their energy, they could have a very small presence, you know, so many different versions of it. And yeah, I just wanted to pause and state that, because I think the more we can unpick that, the better. Because, you know, that does relate to like believing women and, you know, believing that danger can come in a whole range of packages.
And, it, you know, depending on what you deem to be a small boundary, a big boundary, and we all have different definitions. But, you know, as I'm saying this, you know, like, there were the abundant lies that I saw right away. And what I thought was, well, yes, it is. And yes, like, I'm definitely turned off by this. I don't want to be stuck up about only looks. Like, I'll just go for the hike with him. I'm sure he's a nice guy. I know he's a nice guy, right? And then little by little, chipping away, there was, you know, more lies and more lies and more lies. And then, you know, it just becomes bigger. Then he physically crosses the boundary. So it's just showing, like, you know, I hadn't dated, again, I can't remember if he was the first or second date, but before that, I took 5 years off from dating. So I also... I wasn't listening to my gut as much because I didn't really know if it was my gut or not, I guess you could say. But yeah, if they're going to cross a boundary, they're going to keep crossing boundaries. Like, if they disrespect you, especially that early on, they're just going to keep disrespecting you. It's not going to be a one and done.
Yeah. Yeah. They're going to think they can get away with it. And yeah. So what happened then? How did it end?
So after that ended, what did I do? Did I make up an excuse? I might have used like the traditional, like, oh, my sister's having an emergency type thing.
Yeah. And see, even
I did something weird like that. Well, not weird, but one of the traditional things. And I texted him later. I didn't want to stand there and explain it. Also, at this point, he's crossed into the physical barrier.
Exactly what I was thinking. Yeah. You know, you've then been pushed into lying yourself, because you understandably were like, oh, I don't know how safe this is anymore, because I've been surprised by his behavior so many times.
And there's not a ton of people in the parking lot, and our cars are right next to each other. And you know what? It doesn't matter, right? I can do whatever I want to do. And so can anyone else, male or female, to get out of a situation I'm no longer comfortable in. So I ended up texting him about it later. And that's when he was like doing the whole, like, apologizing, yes, but like really just like begging to keep talking to me and begging to see me again. So then I had to block him eventually. Well, after not too long, I blocked him. And then he got to me on Match. I don't know how, or I forget how it works, but I had to block him on there and then block him again or something. And so I was just blocking him.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I know that's a lot, but I'm glad. Yeah, I'm glad it certainly didn't go any further, you know, and that you brought those boundaries up, you know, you stuck by it. Wow. And were you going to, was there a part two to the story? You said like a first and last date. Did you mean that was the first and last?
Oh, yes, that was the first and last date. Yeah, a lot of my, at least half of my frogs before I met Sean were only first dates.
Oh, yeah. I like those numbers. Yeah, that's good.
That's good numbers. Like, are, is it usually like most of them are first dates or?
So eight is a lot more if you like had many relationships with all of them. But if a chunk of them were first dates, then that's a lot less emotional labor.
Oh my gosh. So it was five last spring, took a break because I was so frustrated and pissed because it's so much work, right? And then went back December of last year. So, you know, 6 months ago or whatever. But yeah, so the five were in 2.5 months.
Yeah. I've just noticed, are you drinking a Monster energy drink?
I am.
That is my kind of financial planner. I love it.
I was thinking about going for, even though I went for my walk, I kind of want to go for a run a little bit. So I'm like, maybe I'll go for a run and then I'll do the rest of my work later.
Yeah, be wired on the chemicals in that and also the endorphins. Why not? Double up.
I mean, are they the healthiest things for you? No, absolutely not. But do they give me a little boost to get that run in? Yeah. So how about this? If I don't have the Monster, I'm not going to go for the run. If I do have the Monster, I am going to go for a run. The run cancels out the Monster, and then nothing's gotten done.
Yes. Yeah, we'll take it. I love it. I love that it's now become an ad for Monster. And so let's circle back to divorce then. So we've talked a little bit about, you know, the reasons why people hold back understanding this topic. And also just there is like a lack of information out there, like we've talked about before, like a lack of good, accurate information. You know, even researching it a bit myself was kind of tricky because I learned as much about how the rules used to be in Ireland as I did how they are now. And so I can't even explain to you clearly, even having tried to look into it myself, what all the rules are at this point. And you know, and that is part of the problem. And so could we run through some of the misconceptions that you face with your clients when they're coming to you? What are the biggest misconceptions you tend to find?
Yeah. So there's not always a rhyme and reason to what the misconceptions are. The misconceptions are almost the same based on who the individual is and then the stage that they're in. I mean, sure, the closer they are to the beginning of the divorce or really pre-divorce, they haven't even started it yet, which I see a lot of people before they start it. It's kind of like getting information from me and me getting them kickstarted and them like feeling safe that they have someone on their team.
With that, how much of it feels like them trying to fact find if it's even possible? Because I wonder how many of them come to sort of explore things early stages with you just to be like, can I face this? Or do I try and weather it, this marriage?
That's a big part of it, because with the misconceptions, they need to know before I start this, because I'm not there's no turning back once it's started. Before I start this, am I going to survive? What's it going to look like on the other side? Like at least an idea. Is it true that I will get half of what's in my husband's retirement account? Is it true that he will get half of what's in my retirement account? Is it true that I will or won't get spousal support? Is it true that I won't get child support if XYZ? So we do a pretty high level in the complimentary consultation. I have them give me information, just some basic high level information before I go into the meeting so it can be productive. But some of those misconceptions are, you know, he gets to keep everything that, you know, is in his name. No, anything that was earned during the marriage is split 50-50. And it's vice versa. What do you mean I have to give him half of what is mine? It's not yours. It's marital. It's everybody's. Well, he's the one that racked up the credit card debt, not me. I'm not paying for half of that. Yes, you are. You allowed that. Well, I didn't like it. You stayed married, though. And of course, I don't say it like that, right? But these are the hard realities that I tell them. Yeah. And they appreciate that I'm going to tell them the reality as kindly as possible.
Yeah, and that's something we explored in our other conversation of, like, that is what in most states you were telling me is sought, is what is equitable rather than what is fair. Because to a large extent, how do you decide that? How does a judge that has not been in this relationship know all the ins and outs? And there are so many factors like cheating, like, you know, how the money was accrued. There's so many ways that, you know, can be seen in various forms of morality. And instead, what is probably the easiest thing in some ways is we stay in as much the financial position we're currently in as possible. And it seems to be like that's the kind of medium that a lot of legal systems have found around the world. And I'll tell you, one of the misconceptions that I had kind of looking into this was, to what extent, including here in Ireland or, you know, in the States or in the UK, anywhere else, all over, there's such pressure to prove, to provide evidence in order to gain a divorce. And I think that was a concept that I had not ever wrapped my head around.
Yeah. So one of the first things that we do, and I really do, especially if an attorney's not involved or for a while or at all, we need statements. So we're collecting statements for everything. Statements, mortgages, retirement accounts. That's all evidence. And we need that to verify information. I'm not taking anyone's word for what this asset or this debt is. Number one, there's going to be a ton of lying. Number two, I don't care how intelligent they are or not intelligent they are, they're going to read it wrong. They don't, oh, well, this is an IRA. No, it's not. It's a 401k. Well, those are close enough. Absolutely not. Drastically different, especially in the divorce, would be one of the biggest catastrophes if we mix those up. So, yeah. And again, you know what? With that, like, oh, like super, super, super smart doctor. I just use that as like the traditional example, and stay-at-home mom. Both of them can be just as confused about what the statement is and what the statement isn't. It doesn't matter the level of education or any of that.
Because this is an area that none of us have education on. And, you know, that's why it can be so surprising to then come across it. Like, well, you can tell me if this is the case where you practice. But here, one of the elements in order to gain your divorce, I should say one of the specifications even to apply for it in the very first place is to provide evidence that you've been living apart. And the rules have like eased up here. So like looking most recently at my notes here, you've got to prove that you've been living apart for 2 out of the previous 3 years. And previously in Ireland, it was a lot.
Smokes.
Yeah. And it used to be a lot longer than that. That's that got shorter in 2019. Like, so this is.
So in the States, it's by state. So every state has different divorce law. Now, many of them have extremely similar, but overall, the most common traditional is 6 months if there is a period of time. So your 2 years is, that's a long time.
It does feel like a lot. Yeah, before you even apply, before you take anything to the court.
To me, that does more harm than not, because what if someone has financially cut you off? What are you going to do for the 2 years? Yeah. How do you leave?
Yeah, it's scary. And this is kind of what brings me on to another thing I was really keen to get your perspective on, is we talked about this off air even, like how many people in your position with your line of work and your specific focus on like the ending of not just relationships, but, you know, legally binding relationships. It could be easy. It could be very possible to get really cynical around marriage. And yet you're not. So can you talk me through, like, I guess you have the advantage of knowing what the endings can look like, maybe. And perhaps that's what we could all do with a bit more of knowing the potential consequences to, okay, marriage can be so incredible, but also what happens when it's not.
Yeah. So I have always wanted to get married. I still want to get married. I see Sean and I getting married. I mean, I don't know exactly when. We're not engaged right now, but it's not going to be a long period of time before Sean and I are married. So
I love that you put that on the record. Well, that's decided.
I mean, we met each other less than 3 months ago, and I've been living with him for 2 months, you know, in another city. So, but, you know, maybe the next time we talk, Bobby, I'll be at my wedding. I don't know.
Yeah, love it. Yeah, we'll get an update from you.
So, you know, we are going faster than usual.
Yeah, you can tell me how marriage is from the inside, and hopefully you're not like, it's a trap. Yeah. Hopefully you're not disappointed.
I still believe in having a soulmate. I also know that. See, the mistake you should never make is, but it's different for me, but it's different for me, but it's different for me. So that would be the perfect mistake for me to make. I literally live and breathe divorce, see all different kinds, horrible, abusive situations, totally amicable. Wow, that's beautiful co-parenting. Holy smokes. And you guys are like best friends. Oh my goodness. You love each other's new boyfriend, girlfriends. Okay, this is weird. And I see that. And then there's like, well, I don't need to worry about divorce though, because Sean and I are in love for real, for real. And like, I would never divorce Sean and he would never divorce me. So that'd be the perfect mistake for me to make, where the fact is I need to stick to my guns that I've always had, even before I got into finances, well before I got into finances and divorce, which is get a prenup. And we talked a little bit about this, I'm sure you remember, Bobby, which is, mm-hmm. you know, make your own set of rules. Because if something does happen, and maybe it's not either of your faults that you need a divorce, sure, that's a small percentage. But if something does happen, you have a contract that you, the two of you agreed to, that the two of you thought was fair, that designates what will happen to everything should you divorce, rather than the government deciding what will happen. And probably whatever was happening when you got married, the laws are different. And you just have to bow to what those are. I don't want that to happen. I like my own set of rules. That's also the same reason why I have a very detailed will, power of attorney, and healthcare proxy. Because if something happens to me, I'm out running after our talk today, and I get hit by a car, I want my own set of rules that I already made up with an attorney to be followed for my end-of-life care, not what the government says should happen in the hospital. So I view it as kind of going back to, I don't like institutions. I view it as I'm going to make up my own rules whenever I can. And a prenup is all that that is for a marriage, is designating what would happen. But yeah. I love love. It's my favorite.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And I have plenty of reasons, but experiences that might have turned me off. Similarly, and yeah, I'm like, no, still a huge romantic. I will cling to this. It is my right. And so, no, I appreciate that. And I'm so on the same page with the prenup thing. This is something that surprises people about me. I'm way more like, marriage is something that I very much will base off relationships that I'm in, as opposed to I don't have a fixed perspective on it. I do have a fixed perspective on prenups. I'm infinitely more pro them than I'm pro marriage. And that feels like the wrong way around to most people. And yeah, it's, you know, it's for this reason. It's like the insurance policy you get to take out of this massive commitment in your life. You know, one of the biggest you'll make.
Yep, exactly. And usually divorce is the biggest financial transaction that a person will make. Now, if you've been married a year, no. But you've been married for a while, there's hundreds of thousands of dollars that are being split up. That is the biggest financial transaction of your life. I would rather have my insurance, as you call it, on that financial transaction than not. So get that prenup done. And you know what? I just thought of this. I haven't processed this, but just a thought that popped up with how my relationship works with Sean and the type of person I am. And how he brings out all the best in me. I would rather have years and years and years and years and years of that with him and still have a divorce than not have it. Kind of like, man, I don't know if this is a good comparison either.
No, I like that. Yeah.
I'm still having a very hard time grieving the loss of my dog from last October. I'm actually going to go back to processing that with my trauma therapist on Monday. But anyways, therapy! So I'm just really struggling with it. We were watching something the other day, and it reminded me of Sid, my dog, and I started bawling my eyes out, and just, it's really hard to talk about him at all without getting upset. So I'm not going to go into details because I can't, unfortunately, but I would have rather, I've been in pain for 7 months, you know, with this whole thing with Sid to do my baby, fur baby. But I would have rather had that 9 years with him and all this pain. I mean, I went into complete shock. I was in shock for 2 days, which has only happened one other time in my life when a very traumatic event happened. I would have rather had all that pain and still continuing to have it and needing to work on it with my therapist than, you know, I wouldn't give up all the good things. So if I only get 9 years with Sean, I'll take the 9 years. I mean, I'm going to get more, but I'd still rather have that.
Yeah, I get that. And yeah, some vulnerability that's kind of linked to it on my side is when I've been at my most cynical around relationships, a big part of that has been this kind of feeling that the benefits and the, you know, the joy and the blissful moments that you can feel have seemed counterweighed. That like, I'm almost, the more I get into something that feels like it has so much potential, the more like the risk of the heartbreak rises. And at times that's, you know, that's put me off even getting into things, or it's, you know, encouraged me to be avoidant and, you know, hold back a lot of myself because it's felt like, okay, well, what is waiting for me? You know, is all this happiness gonna be counterbalanced? And, you know, and I think the missing piece of that, I think a lot of it was, you know, choosing the wrong people. And that's why, you know, and as I'm sort of making better choices now, you know, this is something I'll be sharing more with the listeners in one of my host episodes with Stephanie. I'm sort of at a point where I'm finding less regret now. I'm finding, you know, less looking back and thinking, oh, I wish things had been different. And part of that is making the better choices. And so I really appreciate that perspective. But part of it is like the healthy realism, right? You know, that when we have enough of the pieces, when we've done enough of the work on ourselves, we can see the balance. My thinking like, oh, is it worth getting in a relationship because I'll only be as sad as I'm happy now? That was because I didn't have all the pieces yet.
Right. Right. And that was part of the 5 years that I took off. There were so many things that happened during the 5 years that I took off and worked on so many things. And part of that was not having a partner. And even with Sean, like, especially the first few weeks, it was super scary for me because even though I knew it was healthy and I knew it was safe, I wasn't used to having it be healthy and safe. So it was everything I wanted. It was everything that I talked to my therapist about. I was continuing to talk to my therapist about it. I'm like, I love all of it, but like, I feel uncomfortable. And they're like, because it's out of your comfort zone. You're used to being treated, you know, not well. Your last relationship, whether it was a day ago or it was 10 years ago or it was 5 years ago, it was completely different than what's happening right now. So even though you're ready and this is what you want, you're going to be a little uncomfortable, but it didn't last long. But it was just so weird, right? It's like, this is everything I wanted, but I hate it.
Yeah, well, that's it. It can be really scary. And there can also be that feeling of, oh shit, I really can't fuck this one up. And that's something that I've like experienced recently where I'm like, oh dear, I'm making better choices. But that's a different kind of pressure that I now need to adjust to.
Yeah, now I don't have any excuse if it gets fucked up. And one of the things my mom said, and she only says this hardly ever, you know, it means something that she does. So I was telling her about Sean for the second or third time or whatever, right? And she goes, he sounds really good, don't fuck it up. And I was like, thanks, mom.
I love that. Oh, I love no parents pressure. And their sex. Yeah, indeed. And so we'll start wrapping up. I will ask you more about Sean in the bit behind the paywall for our Apple Podcast subscribers, because we talked off air about, you know, some of the external pressures you felt around, like, were things moving too fast? You know, are you sure about it? How did you figure that out? So we'll circle back to that. But for now, we've got to choose our rules of the game. So what is something that you'd recommend trying to live by in dating or relationships? You give yours, I'll figure out what the fuck mine is going to be.
Living by in the rules of dating and relationships.
Oh, we both stuck. We can take a moment.
Listen,
we can
I got it. Listen to your gut. First instinct, bam, do it.
That's a really good one.
Sorry.
Yeah, I almost want to steal that one and make it my own, because that's something that I've really had to practice. Like, I have pretty good gut instincts, and therapy is only sharpening them. And yeah, it's, you know, it's believing them. And okay, well, I guess my rule of the game then is around, like we've talked about before on the show, like, in fact, I feel like I talk about this a lot, is like familiar trauma. That sometimes the things that we kind of recognize and we know how to function in can precede whether or not they're healthy for us. And so, yes, listen to your gut. And I would add, you've really got to act on it too, because I've definitely been in situations where I've listened to it. And then, the, you know, I've seen some of the warning signs and I've gone along with it because I was, you know, I wasn't making as healthy choices, or I didn't have all the boundaries I needed to. And in some ways you can feel protected, because then when it crashes and burns, you're like, oh, well, I saw it coming. I was sort of somewhat mentally prepared slash a bit checked out. So I kind of was a bit prepared for it. And yet, why did I put myself through this?
Yes, you have to listen to your gut instinct, but act on your gut instinct. And I was reading something a few weeks ago that basically was what you were saying with, but if it fails, when it fails, you can say, well, I knew it was coming. So it's almost like setting yourself up. It was something about women picking men that were like down the ladder. So then when the men broke up with them, it was, well, I was better than them anyways. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I can see that. I've seen that in friends. I'm not going to name any names. and no, I think all of us have been that person at times though, right? That like, it's a really uncomfortable thing to talk about. And like, certainly one thing, I mean, someone was asking me the other day about someone, like, oh, what would you rate them out of 10? And I was like, I don't know. Like, my brain does not function like that. And yet I think we can all have a kind of like vague understanding of where, like, societal hierarchy, right? You know, I think right from like a young age with like popularity at school, we start learning kind of who holds the power. And it can be difficult to kind of look that stuff in the eye and realize how much we do pick up on it and act accordingly with our interactions, you know, but it's there, you know, some like, and I find it an interesting phenomenon where like, irrespective of however you feel about your appearance, there can be a pull towards people ending up in relationships where they're similar attractiveness levels to people outside of the relationship. And I find that a really interesting phenomenon that can contrast with, you know, they may actually be convinced that the other one is like 10 times more attractive than them.
Right.
And yet they can still fall into balance. I don't really have a point there, but it's just it's a weird thing to talk about.
The point was more so at the beginning and then it was explained. The point doesn't have to be at the end. Sometimes the point's at the beginning and then you explain your point. That's fine.
There you go. Now I'm doing the tangent.
It's a tangent and we don't even know that we were doing that. I just started a sentence and I hope I, you know, end up somewhere.
I think we should wrap up there. I think it's been a long day. Thank you so much for your time. If people want to find your work and, you know, potentially go in for one of these incredibly informative free consultations, where should they go?
They can find me on the web at supportivedivorcesolutions.com. And there will be all the information about my services and contact information to get a hold of me.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to go a layer deeper into this conversation, I will link in the description the episode we did on mental podcast as well. But for now, thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening.
You can support the show, get ad-free episodes and bonus content by joining our new subscription on Apple Podcasts.
This replaces our Patreon and it's slightly cheaper.
Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta,
with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.